G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White, speaking of great men, is in a new room. I don't know where he is, but he's online. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. I'm a bit nervous about this morning.
What's happened?
Well, firstly, it's a good show. Looking forward to the show.
Well, that's when you step up.
Well, there's some good guests on. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to the Legend series. Looking forward to speaking to Luke Beveridge, etc. Taylor Adams. But it's the first time I'm doing it in a house situation where there are other people in the house.
Oh, boy.
Other little people in the house. I've already been told last night that I was going to have a studio audience for the show. They're not up yet, Daniel, but they will come at any moment. And I'm a little bit nervous about the little people that might frequent this room I'm in.
So what room are you in?
I'm in my office. I'm actually in the completed house in the office. The heater's on. I've had cornflakes.
You sure you turn the heater on? You've got a lot of layers on.
Well, I put my clothes on before I put the heater on.
Right.
I'd be surprised if the vest lasts the first hour of the program.
Okay, right, yes. We have seen some vest issues with you through the journey. So we'll see what happens there. But White HQ for the next 6 weeks?
It would appear so. How are you feeling this morning?
Flat as a tack.
I reckon you'll be as flat as a tack.
Yeah. Flat as a tack. Jeez, I was flat yesterday when that news came through. 6 weeks. Oh, you bastards. It just took me a while to get my head around it, I must admit. Took me a while to get my head around it. Wasn't very happy last night. Had a grumpy night last night.
Right.
I'm sure there's a lot of Victorians out there feeling the same way.
So how do you feel waking up this morning?
I'll be right at some stage. Got a show to do, so the red light's on, so I'll get through this one. Now, I'm just annoyed, Whitey, just annoyed with the whole situation that's got to this point. That dude, the security guard who was having a great time with the guests, I hope it was worth it, Whitey. Very annoyed.
Was there only one?
I don't know. I don't know the rule, the particular details. The outline was enough for me to firstly get annoyed. And then you get this point where it was locked down again for 6 weeks. It's a long time, 6 weeks.
Yeah. How does it change your life?
Well, I was coming out of the fog, Whitey. This is the thing. We're all coming out of the fog. We had a little bit of leeway. We were able to do some things that we would like to have done with other people. Other people are good. I've worked out other people are good. Mm. The people that I like are important in my life. And not being able to get access to that is a touch annoying. That's more than a touch annoying. That includes family members as well. So it's just another pain in the backside's what it is. But I don't know. As I said through the journey, I'm prepared to listen to the medical advice to get our way through this. And far be it for me to come up with a better solution because I don't know the details and how that works. But it is bloody annoying.
It reminded me a little bit of Jane Saville. She was on track for victory.
She was.
And the fluorescent red table tennis bat came out and said, "Nah, as close as you are, back you go." Or, in fact, off you go. That's it. Now, we obviously don't go... We can still continue. We can still participate in life. But it was a bit of like a snakes and ladders type situation where you're on the third last tile, about to get to 100. You're on 97, and you get the big snake, and you slide back to about position 15.
And back down.
I think that's the hardest part, and I think the hardest part also is that you're seeing other states doing so well, and you know we saw the footy on the weekend, and there were crowds at Brisbane, there were crowds in Sydney, and. You know, we looked at the situation where there was possibly going to be 25,000 people at the Collingwood-Essendon game. Mm. Now, that obviously didn't eventuate, but we're now in a situation where it would appear it's almost impossible to see their crowds now at the MCG for the foreseeable future. So I think that's the hardest part, is that there are other parts of it. You know, there was a time where all Australians were supposed to be together. That really hasn't played out that way because of the political games a lot of our premiers have been playing.
Yes.
But now it's very much State of Origin, Victoria versus everybody else. And that's just the way, you know, that's just the way it's going to be. And probably the hardest part for me, Daniel, was just how upset my son was last night. You know, he was really upset about not being able to see his family, his cousins, not being able to probably play football on the weekend. We haven't really sort of attacked that with him yet.
Just those sorts of things.
Not really. I think he sort of understands. He's meant to be making his debut on Sunday.
Yeah, there's a lot of kids
about that sort of stuff. Yeah, just that sort of stuff, seeing how... Because it's having a major effect on young children.
No doubt.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a 13-year-old in my house who's a bit flat about not playing game number one this season on Sunday. Not a tantrum as such, but as a very upset young man about that.
Yeah.
I think we kept training last night.
Yeah.
So all that stuff. So the kids miss out a bit, which is as you say, it's pretty hard. That's pretty hard for the kids. Imagine being a Melbourne A-League team.
Did they get out or not? I think they did.
They were supposed to get out last night.
Yeah, I reckon it happened.
They've had a few stuttered attempts to get through. They did fly out last night, confirmed.
Yeah.
But Scotty Jamieson he's got the wife who's heavily pregnant. He's hopefully going to join us this week before it's out, just to give us the latest on that situation. But a lot of stuttered fits and starts situation for the A-League team yesterday. It was a bit of a debacle, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel a little bit sorry for them in a lot of ways, the A-League, as to how it's all played out for them. Obviously, they were starting a lot later than a lot of the other codes. And it's not like netball for them, where obviously netball's starting later as well at this stage. But they're starting a new season, whereas the A-League, they're still trying to finish a season that started way back in last October.
Yeah.
So I think that's the hard thing for them. There's just such a gap between their last game and when they're trying to literally finish off three or four games. They already know who the champion is going to be. It's a really difficult situation for the A-League.
Yeah, it's not ideal. And this communication confusion in the last couple of days for the teams getting out of Victoria hasn't helped. But you're right, it's probably not too many people's fault at this stage, considering the moving landscape and the dynamic moving of the landscape in the last 48 hours and such, with all the implications through this COVID second wave, as they're calling it. They'll get up there at some stage and eventually get through this season, and who knows what it'll all mean and how it'll look and how it'll finish. But it'll be extravaganza of sport. That's what we do know, Whitey. When we do get that rolling, the A-League, we'll have the AFL playing 5 weeks and games coming out of their ear holes. Every night there'll be a game of the A-League. The NRL will go through their motions, as they've done pretty well through the journey as well. So for a sports fan, at least we'll have that to watch through this period.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking forward to sitting on the couch tonight and watching Test cricket from England. You know, we haven't had that, obviously, for a long time. It's going to, I know you wouldn't, but it's going to be fascinating for me to watch England and the West Indies tonight. I mean, for a number of reasons. Obviously, it's cricket, but also just to see how it all plays out, because they're not allowed to use saliva on the ball, and there's other obvious protocols in place that are going to make it difficult for cricket to be played the normal way. But at the same point, it is cricket. And I think that, you know, just even the news coming out of overnight in England, that looks like Stuart Broad's going to miss the team. He's going to miss out. They're going to go with Archer, Anderson, and also Wood over Broad. And
Wood that's created over Broad.
A lot of, yeah, so that's created a lot of, or it might be Anderson over Broad, to be honest. But that's created a lot of controversy, and that's what you want. You want Test cricket back. That's part of the whole thing that goes with Test cricket, is debating who should be in the team and who shouldn't be, and who's the unlucky player to miss out. Do they play four quicks? Do they play a spinner? We haven't had that conversation around cricket now for quite some time. So I think that's really exciting that we've got international cricket back, even if you want to go to sit down and watch the first ball bowled at 8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, if it's 8 o'clock tonight, I might tune in. I was thinking more sort of 10:30, 11 sort of stuff, but that's okay. 8 o'clock tonight, I can see the first hour of play. That'll be all right. Where are they playing?
They're playing at the Rose Bowl, which is down in Hampshire.
Okay. Okay, off the SMS, some feedback coming through. Great timing for those with bad haircuts this six-week lockdown.
Correct. You know what? We talked about... My dad came over yesterday. He said, oh, your hair's not that bad. I said, it's horrendous. And it's actually worse today than it was yesterday.
It's worse.
It's that bad. I'm wearing a cap, even though I'm just floating around the house by myself.
I did notice the cap was on.
Shocking. I am tempted to go back to Cindy today.
What's Cindy
going to
do?
She might be in lockdown. Actually, she might be in lockdown.
Well, not today. She won't. Tomorrow she will be. Although hairdressers are able to, you're allowed to do that, aren't you? You're allowed to take it.
She needs a good 6 weeks just to have a think about what she produced yesterday.
You just can play golf.
I had a text from someone yesterday. Hey, can we still play golf? And well, we actually can. So you can still play golf. You can still fish.
There's still guests allowed at the golf course.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, we'll see. This is the problem. My golf course is a bit wet at the moment.
Yeah, well, so is mine.
So, and yours are going to be too. So we might be able to, but not able to. And that would be even worse, Adam.
Well, yeah. I mean, my golf is so bad at the moment. I actually don't want to play golf. But I'm blaming the mud and the wet conditions for how badly I've been playing lately. But, yeah, that if you're going to not be able to play golf, this is probably the time of year you're happy to sort of put the clubs away for 6 weeks. Although the weather's meant to be quite good for the rest of the week.
Is it? Any millage?
No millage. Sunny day today. Pretty good tomorrow and Friday.
Righto. Well, at least there's that. If I can walk the dog without too much stress, then that's a good result.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't happen, does it? You can't play a game of golf without being stressed. Just on the cricket front, we talked about the imminent cancellation of the T20 World Cup.
Yes.
I think it's probably going to happen today or tomorrow that announcement will be made formalised. I don't think the IPL is going to be played, at least in India. There's even talk that the IPL might be played in that sort of October-November window in the UAE. That might be what will happen with the IPL. I know they're pretty keen for that to take place. The Caribbean Premier League will I think they're still hoping to play that sort of around that September mark. So cricket's slowly coming back. It's going to be a bit different, but it's slowly coming back. And you'd still think that despite what's happening here in Victoria, that the India-Australia Test Series will happen. It's just a question of what it's going to look like.
Yeah, well, I was talking about, I was following a thread yesterday on Twitter about the Australian Open and how concerned, the level of concern for the Australian Open, just from international tennis people, not from the organisers here at the moment, but the level of concern for the Australian Open from a Melbourne perspective. If, and this is clearly without notice and a hypothetical long way away, if it couldn't be played in Melbourne, would they have the facility elsewhere? Could they go to Sydney and do it up there? Or was Perth or Adelaide have a venue capable of hosting that major? Or Queensland?
I would say Sydney would be able to, if you think back to the Olympics and their ability to hold a tennis tournament there. Brisbane with that Pat Rafter Arena, or the Brisbane setup there where they have they've had the Brisbane International there for quite some time. It's sort of changed a little bit last year.
Yeah.
Look, it would clearly be different, but I think they could do it if they had to.
Okay.
This is why. I understand. I knew you'd be really flat this morning. But I can understand why you are, and I can understand why people are, just when you think about how close we were to getting back to normal, and now we're having these whole conversations around things, are they going to happen again in 6 months' time, because we're back to where we started.
Yep.
We're probably even worse because of the numbers. Or are we better because we've learnt from our mistakes and we actually know how to get on top of it with the experience of last time? I don't know.
All I know is the toilet paper's gone again.
Well, that was $1.04 that was going to be the case.
So, well, that on top of everything else annoys me even more. I think, like, how stupid we are that we decided that we need more boggo roll. I mean, like, what's...
Well, it's not just toilet paper. Shelves are being cleaned out again.
It's madness.
I know, of course it is.
It's madness, Adam.
Because we've gone through the lockdown period previously, and we know that there was plenty of food, there was plenty of things to from the supermarkets. We know that. So why there would be panic the second time is still predictable, but no less stupid.
No less stupid. That is spot on. From an Olympics perspective, it's interesting because there's some feedback coming through, because they're going to do the big 12-month countdown to Tokyo 2021. Of course, the 2020 Olympics was pushed back, postponed on the back of the COVID-19 situation on the global stage. They are saying at this stage that the only feasible way for the Games to be held on schedule next year would be on the development and the release of a vaccine for the Olympics. So if there's no release of that in the next period of time, the 2020/2021 Olympics might just be cancelled full stop, which would be a dramatic turn of events.
Yeah, and I mean, they have said that that was the case when they made the announcement that 2020 wouldn't happen and that in 2021 there would be an Olympics based on the fact there'd be a vaccine. But I think as we've reached a point now half where it's a year before the Olympics are scheduled to start.
23rd July.
They've just reminded everybody that, there are going to be an Olympics, but again, just reminding everybody based on the fact that there is a vaccine. Mm. And as we stand now, sort of, probably 2 or 3 months after they postponed the Olympics, there's still no suggestion we're going to have a vaccine anytime soon or a cure anytime soon.
Yep. So that's a very interesting story that we'll be following in the next couple of weeks from the IOC, next couple of months as well, because that's going to be a big one. The cancellation of the Olympics. We talked about the T20 World Cup, which is certainly a big event from a domestic sporting front, but the Olympics is another level altogether. So we'll certainly be all over that. Should there be any change to that situation through the next little while?
Premier League scores from overnight. Crystal Palace 2, Chelsea 3, and Watford 2, Norwich 1. There is a game currently underway after 49 minutes. Arsenal 1, leading Leicester 0. So that's obviously the headliner act, Arsenal and Leicester, with Arsenal just having the lead. That's only happened just recently.
Now, Jamie Vardy scored 100 goals, Premier League goals. Was it last? Must have been last game. There was a great EPL or Premier League video on Twitter that they put out for all the players that had scored 100 goals and a couple of their crackers through the journey. Some of the goals that have been scored, obviously over the period of history through that competition, there would have been some magnificent goals. But some of the highlights of the best out of this world, what they've been able to do, and some of the best names in business on that video. If you can track it down, the Premier League Twitter account was, it was a beauty. If you're into your English Premier League or your soccer, and you're into unbelievable feats by great forwards and great goal scorers, then track that down, because that was magnificent. Let's get rolling on the Whitey World Famous 7 Question Quiz, though. If you're not up and about after a little bit of Born to Be Wild action, Steppenwolf, fully sick mate sort of stuff, then you never will be. The World Famous 7 Question Quiz is all thanks to Western Premiership star Jason Johnson and his magnificent team at Dynamic Food, giving away a $100 gift voucher to the winner of the quiz. Healthy, nutritious meals supporting local farmers, which we love. All the meals cooked by world-class chefs, and the best part is delivered straight to your door. For the next 6 weeks, you might need them. Dynamic.com.au, or call Jason himself on the home number 8669-0587. There are some rules. Don't tell stories. We won't be sharing context. We did way too much of that yesterday. There's been a real clampdown on that. No jokes to be told, no fumbling, no bumbling, no analysis of how you get to your answer. No commenting on the suburbs you come from. Especially if it's in a hotspot, even though we are all in a hotspot effectively now. Don't tell us who you barrack for no more umming and ahhing. There's been a tightening of the restrictions, as you know. No, that's a good question. Whitey gets upset about that now. No how we this morning. No more telling you where the big dog is in the queue, who's gone missing, just by the way, the dog. We don't care what your favourite topic is. If you can call in, you must call in. All postcodes are welcome. We are an inclusive quiz here on The Breakfast Club. I'll give you hints if required, and sometimes they are. Only questions and only answers. Didn't we have a carryover champ situation coming in this morning? What's happened there?
He hasn't rung in to be the carryover champ, so he can't be...
Oh, he's got ahead of himself, got comfortable, has he?
Oh, I was going to say, he got ahead of himself. He got ahead of himself. He thought, I'm too good for this. So I must confess, I'm a little bit worried about today's quiz.
Oh,
because there's some difficult questions, and we don't have a lot of time. So we're meant to be making sure we get out at the news at 7 o'clock. Well, I'm not sure that's possible today, because it's a very difficult quiz. Oh, the carryover champ's rung in.
Yeah, perfect. So we've baited
him. Let's get into it. That's right. Let's get into a difficult quiz today. It starts quite easy and then gets quite difficult. So, Cameron, good morning.
Hey, Waddy, how you going?
Going well, thank you. You should get through the first few questions quite comfortably. Then you're really going to be tested today after your heroics of yesterday. So question number one. What are the two official colours of Wimbledon?
Purple and green.
Correct.
Nice. That's good.
Question number two. Who was this week's rising star nomination in the AFL?
Curtis Taylor.
Good.
Correct. The interesting thing, Daniel, about Cameron's answering here is that while he gets it right, he almost second-guesses himself. There's no real lot of confidence in the delivery of the answer. Have you noticed that?
Well, I think he's actually... I think he's actually taking the mickey out of the whole quiz. It's that easy. He's trying to put a level of energy into it through the lifting of the answer, the intonation at the end.
The inflection.
Curtis Taylor.
The thing goes up. Yeah.
The inflection.
Yeah, that's
just
correct.
To give it some level of interest.
This is about we've got a full box of calls here.
Didn't you just say we didn't have much time? What are
following
you?
The simplest of rules.
Sorry, Dan.
Well, Dan, that didn't happen, did it, mate? I'm going to start sledging Dan.
Don't sledge Dan.
He can say what he likes. It wasn't getting through, was it?
Well, you're not listening. You're not paying it. You know what?
Well, security guards weren't listening.
Well, I had a good time. Hope it was a good time. It screwed us all.
It is so infectious.
Sorry, Cameron. Question three. Which former AFL coach had his first runner at Flemington on Saturday as an official trainer?
Dennis Pagan?
Correct. I still think that story was underplayed. That is an amazing story from Dennis to be able to be an AFL Premiership coach to now be a horse trainer. I think that is quite extraordinary. Question number four.
Plenty of coverage.
Patrick Mahomes is in the headlines after signing his 10-year contract extension. But who was the former number one draft pick in the NFL that New England signed as the replacement for Tom Brady? That happened last week and was big news.
Cam Newton.
Cam.
Correct.
He might be too good for you.
No, this is when it starts to really sort of get a bit difficult for Cameron, who has, I think, answered now, would it be about nine questions in a row?
Yep.
11 in a row. Cameron, this is a record. This is a record, Cameron. All right. How are you feeling about this? How's the emotion levels?
Calm at this point. Yeah.
Okay.
It's nine. I've got it on official record. It's nine.
Okay. Who was the West Indian who hit four consecutive sixes off Ben Stokes in the final over to win, effectively, the T20 World Cup final for the West Indies against England in 2016?
I think that's Carlos Braithwaite.
Oh, that's very good.
He's too good for you. We might
that's
never
very
have to,
good.
We might have to shut the quiz because so Cameron's just going to roll through.
They needed 19 off the last over, and Brathwaite off Stokes went 6-6-6-6 to finish the game with two balls to spare. Okay, that was good. That was good, impressive. Okay, number six.
You're a little
six.
Bit taken aback by that. You're rattled. You are by our
I
man.
I appreciate people that know things.
It's like Kerry Young.
News just came through, Cameron, in the last 24 hours that there will be no mid-season rookie draft as there was last year for the first time. Who was the first pick in last year's mid-season rookie draft who played four games at Fremantle before being drafted to another club?
Josh DeLuca.
Oh, no, that's a setback.
He's too good for you. Cameron is way too good. Is this to run the board?
This is to run the board as carryover champion. Now, this has not happened before.
He's already got enemies. Not sure what else we've got to give him. He'll never pay for a meal again the way he's going, this fella.
Who am I? I was a world champion at 22 and was subsequently named Young Australian of the Year for my efforts to become world champion. I was world champion again 4 years later, but in a major shock, I announced my retirement from my sport at just 25 years of age. Who am I?
Gee, it's very broad. Australian of the Year, though.
Young Australian of the Year.
Nah, I need a sport, sorry.
Retired, did you say? Oh,
no,
he's
gone.
Been buzzed out on the very last question.
Bad luck, Cameron.
Young Australian of the Year.
It's a great effort. You nearly did something that no one else has done, but you didn't quite get there. Tyler from Shepparton. Good morning, Tyler.
Yeah, how are we, boys?
Very well,
good
thank
time.
You. A world champion at 22. A world champion again 4 years later, but retired at 25. And it did shock a lot of people because this person was at the top of his game at that point in time.
Nah, no idea. Sorry, boys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Tyler.
We need a
line free. So, Damien, good morning. We'll just clear Damien out the way. Damien, good morning.
Morning, boys. How are we this morning?
Good, thank you.
Going well.
Now, you are a former champion, Damien, must be said. Who's the answer?
The only one I can think of would maybe be Ian Thorpe.
Not Ian Thorpe. Paul from Frankston, good morning.
Morning, how you going?
Not too bad. World champion at 22, world champion 4 years later, retired at 25.
Jason Danilchenko.
Jason Danilchenko.
That is a brilliant answer.
That's almost worth a prize. 1-300-652-927. Nick from Bendigo. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, boys.
What was that, Nick?
Today's day for me.
What was that?
Today's the day for me.
Today's
the day for you, is it? Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Who is it?
Wow. The worst possible line in telecommunication history, Nick. Congratulations,
yeah,
you're a winner on that front.
Ring us back if you think you know what it is, but you've got to get a better line than that. Dino from Sunbury, good morning.
Casey Stoner.
Yes.
Very good, Dino.
Well done.
Excellent
very,
work.
Very difficult question, that one, without any sort of framing around the sport. But well done to you, Dino. You've come in late and gone, whooshka, picked up the $100 gift voucher from Dynamic and Jason Johnson and his team. Well done. Rock solid quiz. Cameron, stiffest man in the world. Stiffest man in the world. What a performance by him. I'm inspired by that.
Yeah, that'll that's a great effort. He will definitely be part of our tournament of champions.
We need to talk about that. Tyler Adams is on the line from the Magpies, part of our Inner Sanctum team. He's been good enough to join us. Good morning, Taylor.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
We're doing okay, mate. More importantly, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. All settled in up here in Sydney, so a pretty bit of a whirlwind the last 48, 72 hours. We were originally meant to fly out to Sydney on Monday evening or Monday afternoon. On Saturday at about 4 o'clock, we got the heads up that we were flying out at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. on Sunday. So, now that we're here, I think everybody's at ease a little bit more. We're able to train yesterday, which is nice, and we're just getting used to the hotel life.
So which part of Sydney are you in? There's not many teams going in different spots at the moment. I lose track.
We're in Darling Harbour for the next week, and then we're off to Perth on Saturday.
Right, and you've got a few boys over there in Perth. I saw them land yesterday and get some coverage over there, quarantining before that time. So Darling Harbour's a nice place to be. But it's are you allowed out to do stuff during the day, or what's the protocols through the day?
Yeah, we're under strict regulations. We're allowed out for 45 minutes in pairs. So, yeah, it's a quick walk, grab a coffee or bite to eat and back to the hotel. So, it's been okay. The guys have found some board games, and you know, there's plenty of competition going on in the common room, which is nice to see. And, you know, our schedule is quite full. You know, we're able to train now. And, yeah, guys are preparing to play this Friday night, which is good.
So, Taylor, you obviously knew that you were going to be in a situation where you were going to Perth a little while ago, but then this sort of curveball came in to go to Sydney. So when you get told at short notice you're off, I mean, how do you pack? How do you prepare? What do you take? And how quickly did you have to get moving?
Yeah, well, it was a quick turnaround. I think the most difficult part for people was, or for players, was saying goodbye to families and partners, dogs, and not having that extra 24 hours to do that. So I know Jack Crisp was meant to be celebrating his daughter's first birthday, which is going to be in a couple of weeks, on Sunday afternoon. And unfortunately, that was obviously cut short. So, little things like that make it difficult. But with the packing, it was pack as much as you can and hope for the best, I guess, Whitey. It was not a lot of method to the madness. But, as I said, I think there was almost a little bit of relief just getting off the plane and getting here, getting into the hotel and settling in to some degree. It was, a bit of a whirlwind over the weekend.
So when you get the news yesterday, as we all did, that Victoria's gone into lockdown, and there is a chance now that means that you're not going to be able to get back into Victoria if you want to complete a football season in that sort of 30-day window. How do you feel about that, and how do your teammates feel about that when you chatted about it over dinner last night?
Yeah, it's shattering. From my perspective, it just puts extra pressure on my partner. She's got to work from home now. She's a speech therapist, so most of her work is done face-to-face with children, which we take away from her. But I think I look at the bigger picture and I look at guys who had to leave their partners with children. They were probably banking on having some support from their families. Al Pendlebury, for example, has got two young children. And I know that Scott had organised, some family to support her during the period of him being away. So it means the players really have to reassess the situation. Means that there's obviously some communication going on around potentially getting the families into the hubs, which probably wasn't as accessible as previously. And, so there's obviously some angst amongst the playing group around that. It comes from a really selfless position or a selfless place. I think the players are just really worried about their families and their partners, so they're trying to make their life as easy as possible, and that's pretty difficult when you're 750 kilometres away.
That's a really good point, Taylor, because I think, we consider what it's like for the players being away in this situation, and sometimes we do not forget, but it impacts more people than just those that are going into these hubs. Some of the people who are travelling with you starting to reconsider things, given the situation back here in Melbourne?
Not necessarily reconsider, but I think there's going to be some work done behind the scenes to make sure that those families are supported. No doubt, 6 weeks is a long time to look after children by yourself without any support. So, I'm sure the AFL, the AFLPA, and the football club will do what's best for players and their families to ensure that both partners are happy. It's all well and good to have a happy footballer up here, but we've got to remember that there's families back in Melbourne that are dealing with stresses that we don't have to deal with currently. So I think the support from the AFL, the AFLPA, and the football club will certainly review the process at the moment that we're currently in, and hopefully make some changes to help those that need it.
That's such a big part of the puzzle, Taylor. I'm sure everyone's really aware of that. When you and the rest of the group were thinking about going into this hub situation, what were the biggest considerations? Not about all that part of it, but about what you would be experiencing when you're in, you know, quite restricted, a kind of quite restricted situation away from home. What were the things that you feel were your biggest concerns, or the things that you considered that might be something that you would have to overcome during this next period of time?
Do you mean for the players up here, Sherelle?
Yeah.
I think it's just the logistics of how everything's going to work. You know, we're still playing this Friday. So from a player's point of view, and it might sound a little bit selfish, we just wanted the best opportunity to prepare to play well. You know, facilities, we're completely out of our comfort zone. So having access to facilities that allow us to do that. And I guess having enough time away from football whilst we're in this hub that we can, you know, sort of be ourselves, not get completely caught up in working 24/7 whilst we're up here. And the footy club being huge on that. That's been one thing that that we've got some experience from. Well, Nick Maxwell does a bit of work at the Storm, and he was obviously, they've been in the hub for a number of weeks now. So he got some feedback from those guys, and they're able to pass on some of the stuff that he's learnt. And that was basically just around making sure that we don't flood players with things to do, give them autonomy. Obviously, we've got training sessions and weights and a few team meetings, but nothing really extra that has to go on top of that whilst we're up here. Just try to keep the schedule as similar to what it was back in Melbourne. And that was probably the two biggest things, the logistics and the training facilities, giving us opportunity to prepare as well as we can, and then not over giving us too much football to deal with whilst we're up here.
It's been a fascinating period for your footy club. Tay, must admit, there's seemingly news coming out of it left, right and centre every other day. You've had obviously the Steele and Linden situation last week, the Jordan DeGoey thing late last week, the Travis Varko situation through the weekend. It's just things left, right and centre, let alone the whole Heredia Lumumba cloud that hangs over the club as well. How much of that is infiltrating the playing group? And how do you, or if it's not, how do you separate that?
Well, it's hard to ignore as a player. You know, we've got access to social media just like you guys do, so it's almost impossible to keep players sheltered from it or to stop players reading about it. I think what we've done is we've just tabled everything and discussed it. You know, the club's been really transparent in the way that they've handled these issues. A lot of these issues are above our pay grade, so even as leaders, they're above our pay grade, so we continue to support our teammates as best we can, the guys that are going through these difficult periods, and then also support our younger players and guys that have any questions about what's happening. As you said, there's something popping up quite regularly, and it's not ideal for any football team. So it's just something we've had to deal with. We're working through it. There's a lot of unknowns still, and as I said before, it was really nice just to get away to clear the air. Once we landed in Sydney, we had a bit of a catch-up with the team, and we were able to clear the air about some of these things and have a really positive discussion about what we want to get out of the next 6 weeks.
John Quinn is from Quinn Elite Sports, our high-performance guru, and we're getting back into lockdown tomorrow down here in Victoria, or major Melbourne metropolitan area, for 6 weeks. We need some help to get back started again. Quinny, good morning.
G'day, Harf. Yeah, I'm feeling for you. It's not a good place to be, but it is what it is, unfortunately.
No, it's a crap place to be. That's what it is, Quinny. And there's no arguing about that. But people out there are going to be sitting in their chairs today at breakfast and dinner last night, just trying to work out how the hell they're going to get through this. And having to start again, Quinny, as opposed to continuing, I think it's a different mindset, isn't it? How do we approach this?
Well, it's not necessarily starting again. I think it's just a change of your mindset, like you just said. It was interesting listening to Taylor Adams talking there before, and whether you're an AFL player or whether you're just trying to get yourself moving and, you know, lose those extra couple of kilos that you put on, it's the same thing. Just change your approach to it, and this is your new reality. How am I going to best adapt to this and go for it with that? And yeah, I think the advice you're getting from elite athletes is, can be applied to everyday people.
It does feel a little bit different, though, John, I've got to say. The first time it just, I don't know, it felt like we were going into that and everyone was okay. But I've got to say, I'm not sure if everyone's feeling this same way, but it, having to reverse back into something that we were hoping we were coming out of, the mindset does just feel a little bit different and it feels a bit tougher. Is that unreasonable, do you think?
Oh, no, it's not unreasonable. It's a little bit, I think, and we're all guilty of it. I think we all started to celebrate a little bit before the full-time siren went, and there was a goal, you know, just after. And, yeah, here we are, back to square one, and we've, you've just got to reset yourself. And for an athletic population, what I'll be saying to them, and I now say to people listening to this, go about resetting, start again, just begin again. You can't go back, so set again. I use an acronym with the athletes I work with, and the acronym is GRAB. And the G stands for set some goals. So reset those goals, and it's all right for them to be the same as what they were before, whether that be to run a certain time or lose an extra kilo or whatever it might be. And the R stands for responsibility. Take responsibility. Blaming other people for the situation that you're in is not going to change it. So what can you actually do here and now to make the most of what you've got? I can remember years ago when I worked at the Bombers, and it was only early days, and I'd promised James Hird that, you know, I'd get his foot right and with the rehab I was giving him, and it was only a couple of games in and the thing cracked again, and he just left the MCG and went home. And I felt terrible because I'd actually told him that, you know, I'd guarantee you we'd get this right. And I can still remember now talking to you, knocking on his door in the dark of night to basically say, well, sorry, I've stuffed up here. And he answered the door. And I'll never forget his first comment to me was, oh, well, what do you want me to do now? And it was like just the responsibility that he took upon himself. And I think that's what we've got to get here. People have got to say, well, okay, well, what am I going to do now? And then that rolls into the next one of A, which is attitude. And it's your attitude that's going to help get there. And the B stands for balance. Get balance in all the things you're doing and go again.
So do you think, John, in the situation where someone's trying to start again or even just starting for the first time, do you have to sort of write down goals? Do you have to and almost be accountable with the things that you do and probably the things that you don't do to make sure that there's some discipline attached to what you're doing?
I think when you write something down, it makes it official. And the other thing that I reckon is that you share that with other people, even if it's only one or two people that keep you accountable. I'm taking a call from a guy later today, and he's on the other side of the world, and he told me what he's going to do last week. I'm going to see if he's kept his side of the deal when I talk to him later today. One other thing that is just different people get motivated from different things. It might be visual. And so it might be a picture or something that you can have on your wall that just reminds you of what it is you're striving to go for. So if your goal, it mightn't be a fitness goal. It might be that you want to travel and eventually you're going to get to travel. Get the picture of where you want to go and put it up there just to remind you of why you're actually saving those extra dollars each day. So a goal doesn't have to be just something you think about or dream about. A goal can be something you read about. A goal can be something that you go into an agreement with someone about, and a goal can be something that you can actually draw and see and touch.
John, that balance piece I think is a really interesting one, and I'm sure everyone's thinking about it because in many ways the balance that we normally get in our lives with the extra things we're able to do and the people we connect with, just it just isn't available to us and it's not available to us again. When those things aren't there in the same way that they normally are, what's some advice around continuing to get that balance when we are so restricted?
Yeah, great question. I think it's really important to just look at the resources that you've got. Don't focus on what you haven't got access to now. So, okay, you can't go down to the gym. So you can do push-ups. You can use TheraBand. You can use a couple of house bricks. So your body doesn't know the difference between a house brick and a dumbbell. It's just a weight. So look at what you have got, not what you haven't got, and set the program in and around that. But I think, you know, when I talk about balance, I'd look at all manner of things. So that might be, well, how are you going with your fitness program? But how are things going at work as well? What's your what would you rate yourself out of 10 with how things are going at work? How are things going with family? Social is a big one. How are you going to go socially with this? And trying to get all of those things, if you draw them off and say rate them from 1 to 10, and let's say your social life at the moment is a 2, and your fitness stuff might be 5, but your work, you might have it up at 9. Well, if you put that like spokes on a wheel, that wheel of life's not rolling along too well for you. So it just gives you the points that you've got to put the attention onto to work. And, yeah, there's going to be challenges there. And, yes, you can get around with the poor bugger me syndrome, or you can just say, OK, this is what I'm going to do. Take charge. Take responsibility of how you're going to fix it.
The Legend Series continues, and we go back to the Bombers where Quinny worked. And on this day in 1995, one of the greats of all time debuted in the red and the black. His name is Matthew Lloyd. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Lloydy.
Morning, Harf, Whitey, Sorrell. Great to be with you.
Great to have you with us. 25 years ago. Can you believe that?
It makes me feel old, Harf. That's what it makes me feel. But it was one of the, you know, the greatest day of my life, pretty much. Obviously, apart from my wedding day and when my children were born, but from a footy perspective, when you're given the news on a Thursday night at 17 years of age that you're going to be playing and you're going to be joining a forward line with Paul Salmon, Michael Long, Gavin Wanganeen, James Hurd, Mark McCurry, and I was going to be the sixth banana or the sixth wheel in that forward line. I just couldn't believe that I was going to be playing for the Bombers at that stage of my life.
And it was a nice way to open up too. We like to call it, in the racing game, it's an easy kill. You had Adelaide, you won by 122 points, Lloyd.
yeah, it was a time where we actually hadn't played well the week before. I didn't really deserve a game, but I happened to kick four at the SCG in a VFL game the week before, and Essendon had a bad loss, and Sheed was ready to wield the axe, and he brought me in, and we rebounded pretty hard, and I was able to kick goal nice and early in that game. So yeah, it was just a brilliant day. That and I actually played on Tyson Edwards, who was playing his third game of AFL footy, who went on to play obviously over 300 games. So yeah, it was a brilliant day for me and the footy club.
So Lloydy, starting at 17 means you were still at school.
Yeah.
What was it like being a schoolboy and being an AFL footballer at the same time?
Yeah, Whitey, obviously you went to St Bernard's in Essendon, so it was just Essendon heartland, and everyone there just barracked for the Essendon Footy Club. So it was an amazing experience. Sheed had this planned out, I think. It was the first week of the school holidays, and he said, because I was playing for St Bernard's College on Wednesdays, and then I was playing for Essendon Reserves on Saturday or Sunday. So I was cramming a fair bit in, and he said, oh, I'm going to bring you in for a couple of games on the school holiday. So, and then he sent me back to, obviously, VFL when after those 2 weeks. And then he said, when exams are over, I'll bring you back in. So he brought me back in for round 22 against Carlton, and then the final series in my year 12 year. So yeah, they were all my mates, and that they couldn't believe it, that their schoolmate was playing AFL footy on a Saturday. So, they were as happy for me as my family were. So it was such a good time to be at St Bernard's in 1995.
And then you got that opportunity, Lloydy, and you joined that elite group, and your first kick was a goal. Yeah. How amazing was that?
Yeah, well, I've been in the forward pocket, Sherelle, and Paul Salmon just come out on a hard lead, and it just spilled out the back of his hands, and I was just able to swoop on it with a soccer goal. So I was just floating at that stage. I just couldn't believe it. I gave off a handball not long after, and I was still enjoying my goal, thinking about it. Mark Caputo ran through me. So I knew AFL footy, I better wake up pretty soon, because big blokes like Rue could get a hold of you. So yeah, it was a dream start for me. I was able to kick 3 on the day in a big win, but I soon found out what AFL footy's about. I had one handball, I think, in round 2 against Richmond. So Sheed kept me on the bench for about 3 quarters, and I soon learnt that this footy's pretty tough. But it was a draw in front of 90,000 in my second game. So it was a great introduction to AFL footy.
And Lloydy, that's obviously an amazing goal. One of my vivid memories of watching you play was your routine when you went for a shot at goal. Obviously, not one that spills off the back of the pack, and it's a sneaky easy one out the back. But that process you went through, the pulling up of the socks, the throwing of the grass, and we talk so much about the mindset in sport. How much of that did you practice, and how important was that routine for you with your performance, not just with the kick, but more broadly in your game?
Yeah, Sherelle, I was a really poor kick for probably 4 or 5 years, like really poor set shot. I was going at maybe 50-60%, and I just felt that that I had no idea really what I was doing. Sometimes I was kicking through the footy hard, then I was stabbing at it, then I was going off 8 steps, then it was off 12 steps. I really was hurting the team, and I was hurting myself. And I actually copped a bit of a spray from an assistant coach saying, you wouldn't practice anywhere near as much as a Lockett or a Dunstall would, and you're going to hurt us in a big game. And that was probably the trigger point to say they're right, and I've got to do something about it. And I actually got David Whedon, who was probably a great technician, assistant coach, and I got a sports psychologist over an off-season, and I said, I need to do something about this. So rain, hail or shine every day for a whole off-season at Windy Hill, I would get the coaches out there. And I used David to, and they put Tony Lockett on one half the screen and me on one half the screen, and just put it frame by frame. And he was the guy that I tried to work off. My ball drop was way too high. And the grass throwing, well, I was doing it at Windy Hill, where the conditions weren't the best, and often I was having to aim for the point post to try and kick a goal because the wind was so bad. So I threw the grass up probably 5,000 times over a six-month period, and that's when the roof came at Marvel around that time. The roof was on. My routine was stuck because of how many times I'd rehearsed and tried to become a better kick, and that's
cool.
Where it stuck with me, but I improved. Pretty much from that season on to, I've become really confident in the kick. So it's one of my proudest moments to go from a poor kick to, a good kick from that point on,
No wonder your arms and your biceps look so good, Lloydie, because you're throwing up that much grass, that much work and repetition. Strong arms, which is fantastic. Hey, can I ask you, I know there's pressure being an AFL player, and particularly a forward, as you say, if you miss shots, you should kick it. It can hurt the team and it costs your team games now and then. But you came into the game. Now, Essendon basically sold the farm to get access to you, Lloydie. Did you feel that burden and you were only 16 at the time, did you feel that burden of having to be something with the Bombers?
I didn't half back then, but I sensed probably teammates maybe felt it a little bit, that here was this high-priced recruit and, a lot of media attention. Probably helped a bit that Scotty Lucas came with me at the same time, and Blake Carosella, Justin Blumfield, Gary Moorcroft, all guys who played in a premiership, actually we joined at the same time, so that probably helped me a little bit. But I felt like at times a few senior players were testing us out a little bit on the training track, and there was a few, there was 52 on the list back then when we joined half, when you started and I started. So you really have to earn your stripes. And I remember sometimes she'd be good old-fashioned on the training track, throw a ball out there, and I'd have to try and beat Scotty Cummings, who could get the ball out first. Then Paul Salmon, who can get the ball back first. Yeah, Peter Cransburg. It was all these veteran players that I was 16 when I got to the club, but did debut at 17 years and 1 month. And it was pretty tough back then. But after, I think the guys saw how hard I wanted to work and how respectful I was of them, that soon changed. So I didn't feel the media pressure, more the pressure to earn the respect of my teammates, who I saw that four players had to be given away to get me to the club. So I felt that a little bit, yeah.
You've touched on Sheeds a little bit, Lloydie, already in this discussion. Just your relationship with him, because it had its ups and downs, but just his ability to keep you hungry, to keep you on your toes. It was a fascinating relationship that you had with him.
Yeah. Whitey, I know the first time I ever met Sheeds, he sat me down and I thought it'd be all about footy. And he said to me, I want you to set yourself up for life after football. So your aim is to own a house. If you own your first one, you got to go for your second one. And it stuck with me forever in regards to just how you got to be sensible with what you do. So that I thank him in that regard. I don't own as many houses as he does, but what a nice one in Brighton, so I thank him for that. But in terms of, and then with footy, I came in not understanding, like, say, for example, I was always able to get through junior footy pretty well. And then you start dealing with Stephen Kritiok and Mickey Martin and these sort of guys. And it was just a war of attrition. I was going through some tough stages where I was being terrorised out on the field from probably that age of 18, 19. And he taught me in the Velvet Sledgehammer. He taught me how I've got to, if you want to survive in this game, you've got to really toughen up. Like, you've got to, if a bloke's standing in the hole, you've got to make him pay. If the bloke's there, you've got to, yeah, you're getting bigger in the gym, you've got to hurt him. So he just taught me off field, on field, like how to handle myself. If I played a bad game or two, he'd come up to me and go, the other selectors want you out of the team, but you're not going out of the team with me. And I'd go up to one of the selectors a month later, did you want me out of the team? He goes, what are you talking about? I never did that. So he just played mind games. He played mind games, but he'd say to me, mate, yeah, you're not going well, but you're going to kick me five today. I mean, you're going to kick five today. So even though he could hit you between the eyeballs with a spray, he would always finish it with something positive to make you feel like you could play, be best on ground the next week. And that's what, that sticks with me now as a coach. Like, I make a point of, you know, being strong with boys, but always making them feel good that they're going to play well. And that's something that I'm forever grateful for, because I've been around coaches that have been negative and don't make you feel great. And that's something that he was amazing with. Whitey, he was sensational. As I've retired and been out of it longer, I realise how lucky I was to have had him for so long.
Turn our attention now to one of the real hot teams in football, the Western Bulldogs. A sluggish start against the Magpies and the Saints, and then they've gone bang, bang, bang. Giants, Swans, Kangas, out you go. We're too good for you. And it's under the great leadership of Luke Beveridge, Premiership coach, who joins us from the Bulldogs this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Bevo.
Morning, Half. Morning, Whitey.
Great to have you with us. It's been a tremendous 3 weeks for your footy club after a disappointing start, and it secured a game on resumption. You were very disappointed about in public about that. How has that shaped what's happened the last 3 weeks, that game against St Kilda, Luke?
Oh, I think it's shaped it. Our next few rounds were quite dramatically as far as the way we defended. We identified we could come on pretty quickly. I think a couple of the boys just got it wrong. And the great thing during the break was that our players trained on, and we knew that they were physically in good condition. And so, yeah, we went to work on some of those aspects. But our ball use in both the early games was quite disappointing, and it really hurt us on the turnover. So we've just been able to have a better blend over the last few weeks.
Was it tough? Was there an air of deflated confidence in the group after that first game back, after the resumption? As you said, they trained on through the break and would have felt good coming in, and to have that happen first up might have been a whack between the eyes. Was it a tough group to get back on the confidence train, or was it just a matter of course to just move on?
Definitely there was, a time, and even in the lead up to the season, you know, publicly, I suppose there were some labels on us that we weren't proud of, and sometimes to solve the problem or to tackle the actual challenge at hand isn't the obvious one. Our players tend to find a way through it together with their connections. And so they, and sometimes they teach us, you know, that what we're thinking isn't necessarily the right way to take. And so it was about coming back to what was important for the team. And sometimes it's really difficult when you're not playing well and the teams have got you on the ropes to not go into your shell or think about yourself personally, even you're spotting the team. So for our players to really focus on the team-based thing, all the things probably the supporters don't necessarily see, was quite critical in it. And the GWS stand was a really important game for us as a footy club, not just a team, just to establish some semblance of stability. And then we've worked off that the next couple of weeks.
Do you think that could become a bit of a reference point for you, Luke, that game against the Giants? I mean, it was ugly, but you really stood up and there was a fair bit to sort of represent that night. Do you feel that could be now your reference point moving forward?
Well, maybe, Waddy. I mean, I did state after the game that, you know, we don't coach a team of enforcers. We're not a team of young fellas who go out there to play that game off the ball in the fashion that we might have had to confront, you know, in the couple of lead-up games. And but ultimately, you know, the understanding and awareness of what's coming is quite critical. And for the players to stand up for each other, definitely stand up for the skipper to lead the way with his physicality. And we saw some of his courage in the Sydney game, going back with the fight. And for him to, you know, re-establish, you know, what we already knew and continue to covet within our four walls, that he's just an outstanding leader through words and action. But for him to be recognised again, okay, well, that's the kind of player he is, I think was important for him and for our whole group. So potentially down the track, you can, you know, reflect and look back at games like that. I think we have in the past, and it'd be great for it to amount to something in the future.
How's Marcus going? We speak to Marcus a lot on this program. He's a good friend of ours, and he's been, I wouldn't say he's being targeted necessarily, but he's getting a lot of attention on the field, but also off the field. Now he's captain. How is he coping with that? As the development of him as a person and as a player?
Well, I think he's coping okay, but you do worry about your formalised leaders, and particularly young fellas like Marcus, who are newly crowned, and him and I have constant and regular conversations about the challenges that we both face, really. And there's no doubt that he, part of his vocabulary was, what more can I do for the team? What more can I do for others? And he's that kind of individual, as you guys know, that has just got such great integrity. And it, sometimes it's just reminding him that you're already an outstanding person and leader, and others will, you know, will endeavour to come up to speed. Just trust who you are, you know. I mean, trust who you are, what you can contribute. And also, I think in the game, whether it's coaching or even the players' understanding of the instinctive side of the game, it's just trusting your instincts. And I think in recent times, he's just brought it back to, you know, the core of what he does well and the instinctive side of the game. And we've seen that come out in his play. And, yeah, those challenges around tags and what he can do for the team. I mean, last week he didn't get a lot of the ball, but what he did for the team isn't necessarily recognised away from the game, whereas we see it and we understand how much easier he makes it for others with his willingness to block and play some of the important roles off the ball that help us get to the end with a win.
Whatever you've done with him, just keep going, because you're going magnificently, the skipper, after a sluggish start. You've done some great things, Bevo, and we chatted to you about, well, probably 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago, about your career, and had a good conversation about that and where your basis of coaching comes from. And I've been thinking about that through this last couple of weeks with this whole hub experience you're now living through up there on the Gold Coast. And you've connected in amazing ways with all the groups you've coached through your coaching journey and achieved great things. But I imagine this is a challenge that even you wouldn't have forecast one day you might have to get through, to live away from home for such a period of time and keep the group focused through that period. How big a challenge is it for you personally to get through this and have your own family and personal circumstances? That how big a challenge is this to manage a group through this period from a coaching perspective?
Yeah, I think there are some real positives to it as well. I mean, we're really feeling for everyone in Victoria at the moment, you know, with the lockdown now, and I think some of our families and even friends who some of the players are living with, were maybe looking forward to being able to socialise and have people around and you know, take the shackles off a little bit, basically. But obviously now that can't happen, so we're feeling for everyone in Victoria, you know, especially our families and our supporters who have been extremely loyal. And so that's hard. And so in a way, we feel quite fortunate that we've been able to come away. And as much as we're sacrificing a bit, there'll be the first 2 weeks of quarantine, we've got got to get through that. We're still, you know, filling out online forms and getting temperature checked every day, and the testing's happening twice a week and all that sort of stuff. And we can't really go anywhere. But after the 14 days, if Queensland is still in good condition, then, you know, we'll have some freedoms that everyone down south doesn't have, and we'll consider ourselves lucky. But yeah, the opportunity to unify, to bring everyone away together, to live it together, to support each other, was a no-brainer. It's a critical thing for us to stick together, you know, right from Marcus right down to maybe a player who's probably not on the selection radar at the moment. They're still great people, great characters, and they add to the fabric of our environment. And we'll support each other. And at the moment, everyone, you know, seems to be in really good spirits. Yesterday, we settled well. We had our first training session on one of the outside ovals at Metricon. The boys thought the day went pretty smoothly, so full credit to everyone up here who's working to make the logistics reasonably seamless. But it's only the early stages, so I imagine that the challenges we'll face as the weeks roll on will intensify. But I think we're well equipped. We're very close, and it'll just be the family aspect and you know, young. Well, it's great the players have got their partners and kids up here, but staff with young families will really start to feel it. I'd say after we get into the meat of the stay away.
Okay, the boss of the AFL umpires, you know there's a bit going on. Hayden Kennedy is his name. Joey Pignataro's former maths teacher at St Bernard's. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Hayden.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Going well. It was maths, wasn't it, for Joey Pignataro?
Yes. I'm glad he's in radio because he wasn't a mathematician.
He's a very good phone dialer, though. He's the best in the business at dialing numbers, is our man. Lots to talk about with you, Hayden, and we haven't got a hell of a time, but we'll get as much in as we can. Firstly, away from the game itself, the people component of the umpiring at the moment, you've got to, like the players and all the staff, get umpires into all the hubs across the nation, and it's a part-time job for a lot of these people. How has that happened?
Oh, it's just been an amazing weekend that's just passed. You know, once we knew what was going on, all the umpires were contacted as to whether or not they could move interstate. You know, the conditions were worked out in regards to remuneration, et cetera, et cetera. Families, whether they could go. And to a person, everyone put their hand up to go. And so currently we've got all umpires are either based in New South Wales or in Queensland, which is a fantastic effort, you know, to contribute to our great game.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing, I reckon. And people probably wouldn't have even thought about that component of the hub life. But I think that's absolutely be applauded. And you should be very proud of your team, Hayden, because it's hard enough, that job. I reckon umpiring the AFL, as you well know. But having to do it away from home for such a period of time is a great commitment to the game. Was there any reservation or were you expecting a few to perhaps say that this isn't going to work?
Yeah, we're probably expecting a few, you know, with their full-time secular employment. But as I said, you know, to a person, what they've decided to do is either, you know, take leave without pay from their work, or, you know, we've got a couple of school teachers who have, you know, taken the term off after consultation with their principals. And so, you know, they've made enormous sacrifices in order to continue with the game that they love. So, yeah, we're all very, very proud of what they've been able to achieve in such a short period of time, and, you know, really thankful for the families that they're either leaving behind and in some cases bringing with them.
Hayden, how do you coach them then if you don't have that normal contact with them? Is it done through Zoom, or have you been able to get some of the coaches to join them in their hubs? How does that happen?
Yeah, so I'm in the fortunate position. I'm up in a hub at the moment in Queensland. So I've been up here for about 3.5 weeks, so I can have personal contact. But anyone who's outside the hub isn't able to have any personal contact. So it's via Zoom, Huddle, which is our software platform where we put our, you know, individual highlights up. Group coaching will go out today. We had a WebEx meeting with everyone yesterday just to make sure that everyone was okay. So, yeah, it's done mainly by Zoom or Huddle or WebEx. So that's the best that we can do at the moment. So, yeah, we're all going pretty well, though.
Has it been a challenge? Have you been happy with the output from the umpires over the past 4 or 5 weeks since we've resumed?
Yeah, I mean, you can just imagine the circumstances. You know, I mean, even with regards to training, so everyone has to train individually. So they've all got GPS, which they give their results into our high-performance manager who provides feedback for them. And then with us, it's, you know, trying to give them the best edits, the best learning edits that we can. And then we, you know, via Zoom or whatever platform we're going to use, or, you know, personal contact via phone, you know, we're just working through that. So we're doing the best that we possibly can under the circumstances that we've got. And I think the guys are going pretty well at the moment.
How did the weekend wrap up from the holding the ball perspective, Hayden? We had perhaps a stricter interpretation of players being encouraged to move the ball on once they'd, even if they had no prior opportunity. Were you pleased with the outcome, or is there still some work to do on that?
With it, what we were very pleased about was the prior opportunity numbers didn't change, because we thought we'd been umpiring that pretty well. And we were concerned about, you know, with a bit of, what would you call it, media talk through the week, that, you know, our guys would react to that. But, you know, we're really, really pleased that once again the umpires didn't, because we said that, you know, we're going really well. We don't need to change it. But what we did realise in the week leading up to the last round, that holding the ball genuine attempt was something that had slipped away a little bit, and we certainly had bits of vision that we could support our coaching with. So, yeah, we concentrated on that in the week leading up to into this week. And, look, the numbers increased, obviously, with holding the ball genuine attempt. And we got a few wrong. So tonight's coaching session is all going to be around, you know, examples of really good holding the ball genuine attempts, but ones that were just too tough in the end. So, yeah, we just have to just realign ourselves once again with that.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.